you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. We help you make progress on your creative journey. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza! You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into today's episode. Yeah. Creators, are you tired of being paid in clicks and likes? I mean, come on, I'm trying to feed my children these likes, and they're like, we don't like it. Patreon lets you build real sustainable income through the direct support of your fans. That's serious business. The creative system is broken. The whole damn system's broken. If you're a creator, sign up to patreon.com now. That's patreon.com. Start building that steady income stream you deserve today. This episode is brought to you by Storyblocks Video. Storyblocks gives you studio quality 4K stock video without blowing your budget. If you need B-roll, you need some After Effects templates, you need some, we got video motion backgrounds, you know, you gotta check out Storyblocks Video. Head to storyblocks.com/creativepeptalk to learn more about Storyblocks Video. Tomorrow? No, today. Big shout out to Skillshare. We have a new Skillshare out. It's about finding your style. So pumped about this. Skillshare has amazing classes, help you get philosophical, get deep thinking. Go start taking classes today. 2 free months of Skillshare at skillshare.com/creativepep. skillshare.com/creativepep. What's up, man?
Hello, Andy.
So we have two more, just kind of a teaser. We've got two more Co-Loop episodes with interviews with Co-Loop artists to go. This is our second to last for the time being.
Indeed, that's correct.
The math is right there.
It checks out.
Okay. So who do we have this week?
We have drumroll. Watercolor artist and designer Yao Chang.
Yeah! Yao's work is gorgeous if you've never seen it before. And this episode, this was the last one, the most recent that I recorded. And I was not expecting what we talked about at all. I'd prepared a bunch of questions, of course, and her answers surprised me so much that we just went a totally different direction.
That's great.
I always thought, you know, Yao is super professional, like very on it about stuff and has a really high levels of quality. And I just did not know that behind all that was a bunch of weird.
What's so funny to me about that is just because I think that directly kind of correlates to the work she does, or maybe the perceptions of the work she does as well, right? Like, her natural medium is watercolor. She's a watercolor artist. And I think if you just take that at surface level, people might not understand, all the surprising that lies underneath that. She applies her work to a myriad of different products. She's doing surface pattern design. She's licensing. You know, you can find her work on journals and stationery and drinkware and all of these different things. And I think that's really, really surprising.
And I think the other thing is, after this conversation, I realized that it shouldn't have been a surprise, because the way she approaches watercolor is pretty out there. It's not the run-of-the-mill things that you're thinking of when you think of watercolor. It is this moving, living, pulsing, like ethereal kind of watercolor that bleeds and it almost appears to be moving. And to hear all of the thinking behind that was really amazing. And it was also, I think it kind of, this conversation hits on one of the big core values for Co-Loop, which is this idea that it's not just about the work. It's not just about, being a creative superstar. for you, being an agent has always been about primarily relationships.
Absolutely. It's this idea of like melding the professional with the personal, like not just establishing a great business working relationship, you know, on the professional side, but also having that sense of a personal connection, being able to associate and work with someone also on that personal level. Like I want to be able to know that I can sit down and have a beer with that person, right? In the same way that we're...
Or a coffee. Or some of our artists are sober.
Or a coffee or a tea or go to the
drink
movies.
Drink of your choice.
Go to the movies together. I mean, we saw Avengers Endgame together last year, right?
That it was nothing, different times.
Nothing to do with work.
But oh, yeah. Yes.
Remembering fondly the times we go to movie theaters. But yeah, and that was always... That always exuded from the relationship me and Yao have established. Like we connect both on the professional and the personal level.
And yeah, and I've been friends with Yao for a long time. And I think that the interesting thing is that it's not either or, and it's a flywheel kind of thing. Because for us, it's relationships are the most important part, but good relationships may make the best work.
Absolutely.
And it just goes, and it's cyclical like that. And so I think you're going to get a sense of that in this conversation. You might have some mind-blowing moments from all the weird quantum physics stuff that goes into inspiring Yao's work. This is one of my favorite conversations. So
let's get to it.
Let's do it. Just a quick heads up for context. I want to mention that this was recorded pre-COVID times, but I couldn't cut this episode because it's a great deep dive into the best kinds of esoteric creative inspirations. It's actually kind of a masterclass from Yao about how to get weird with your influences while making beautiful, accessible stuff. The content of the show is evergreen creative philosophy, and I hope it's an escape from the 2020 madness for you.
It's funny, I was thinking about the last time that I was talking to you, and it was right after I had come back from maternity leave when I had my first kid.
Yeah.
And now I'm talking to you after coming back from maternity leave.
Let's just make this, the only time we talk is after you've had a baby.
So never again. This is the last time.
Last time we get to talk.
But it's funny how much my career has changed, how different things feel from that first time coming back to the second time coming back. Having Ryan help represent me and Co-Loop has a large part to do with that. But I also just think as a creative entrepreneur, every year is just so different.
Yes.
Though this year feels particularly different because I'm coming back to having an agent in the last year and a half. And so there is some momentum built in pushing my work in more licensing and commercial work. That momentum
You've
has
done
already
some big collaborations,
yeah, right. Like
that
I've
direction.
Already started some of that, but also which was strategically something that I wanted to put in place before I went on maternity leave.
Yep.
And I think that was the right decision for me. But also, you know, kind of going backwards in that I've had someone full time with me building my business for the last 4 years, and now I'm going back to not having someone and then still contemplating, do I want a part-time person? Like, do I want to just be a one-person studio for a while?
Yeah.
And having all of that happen simultaneously with an agent and pushing my work in a new direction makes this year feel particularly different.
Yeah.
But just as exciting. Otherwise, I don't think I would have made these decisions. I think there's a reason why, and I try and listen to my gut as much as I can. But I think it's the right decision for me, but it still feels really, really scary.
Yes.
Because it's so different.
That is the – and that's exactly what I was talking about.
But you know what? Sometimes you have to do that. You have
you
to kind of scrap everything
yep.
and start with a clean desk.
Yes.
To be able to build things the way you want to without feeling obligated to certain things that you've already started or you don't want to part with, but then you kind of do. And so I think just scrapping everything gives you the freedom to listen to your gut
Yep.
And start something new and exciting.
I just did an episode on this. I talked about it like when I was in middle school, I had to get 8 teeth pulled so that I could get braces.
Because
I had 8 baby teeth that wouldn't let go. And my dentist, painful. It was horrible. It was traumatic. But my dentist was like, they're not coming out. The only way the next ones will come in is if you take them out. And so there's just this like, you know, the new
thing. And it's painful.
It's super painful. Yes. Right. And to make room for the new things, you've got to clear it away.
You have to.
And I also had this yoga teacher tell me in class, she said that, you know, shedding the leaves for the tree, this is like part of the process. And I've looked into it a little bit, and they talk about how the reason the tree sheds its leaves is because it expends a lot of energy taking care of the leaves. And so if it does that through winter, then it won't be powerful enough to sustain and could get knocked over and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so I do think I've been in that same process of, all right, clear it all out. There's something very therapeutic as a creative too, to just be like, you know what? I'm not the same person anymore. Boom. I'm
everything.
Just, yeah. Yeah.
New challenge.
Yes.
And I think we like putting ourselves in those really uncomfortable positions. And I think that's when really great creative ideas come from.
Yes.
Is when you put in this position of like, okay, now it's got to go somewhere. Now I have to make something.
Yeah.
You're pushing yourself to have to create and do something new.
Yes. I think it's, you know, the primary reason why I chose this career was because it's not boring.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. No. It's definitely not boring.
Yeah. And I try to remember when you're stressed and it's...
I know.
That's because it's not boring. It wouldn't be stressful if it was boring.
Yeah.
Would you trade it? No. Definitely not.
No.
Yeah. So that
makes
sense.
For cruising to a paycheck? No. No. I wouldn't. But it does come with its own set of unique stresses and I don't know.
Yeah.
So where I am currently is I've unplugged from social media and my website is kind of under construction. I'm revamping everything, revamping my retail side of the business and going through my studio and organizing everything. And that's kind of me. That's my way of scrapping everything off my desk is re-looking at everything. Do I really need this?
Yeah.
Do I really need this part of my business? So I think taking everything out, throwing out the things that I don't need anymore so that I have the space to start new things is where I am right now. And I feel really good about it, but it's also really, really scary not to be working on big projects or being in the middle of, you know, however many consecutive projects that are lined up,
I think
feels really scary. But I think knowing that I've done this for 7, going on 8 years also gives me experience and the reminder that, oh, I've been here before.
Yeah.
It's always worked out.
Yep.
The puzzle is not worked out, but it will eventually come together.
Yep.
I just have to trust the process and just like take a breath and actually enjoy the slow times.
Yeah.
And having the time to do the things that I always have not been able to do, like bookkeeping.
Yeah.
Bookkeeping. No, but all the like the logistics and the back end things that it's not very creative, but it's also essential.
Yep.
Especially when things are rolling.
Yeah.
It's important to have those foundations and know that like, okay, like those are things that are in good place now. I don't have to worry about it and I could just worry about the creative work.
100%. That makes total sense. And I think I feel like with the podcast, I feel like 50% of who I'm talking to are people who it's like I'm talking to my past self who has never had a big break and needs to believe in themselves without proof.
Yeah.
Where you just talked about when you're in this season, you're like, I've done this a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Like, it's still really hard. Yes. I still feel like, what if
just
it doesn't work?
Just as terrifying as the first time.
But at least you knew, like, you know what? I've done some things.
Yeah.
And I've been here before and I know how to do it. And so 50% of the show, I feel like I'm talking to people who have never had a break and they're having to just survive on the fumes of self-belief.
Right.
And I remember that first leg of the journey being like, what if this never happens? What if, like, what if I'm crazy? You know what I mean?
I've had that.
And so I feel like, feel like that 50% is me talking to those people and saying, you've got to sustain that belief, trusting your gut, putting it, which allows you to put in the time and discipline to make it happen until that first time. And then if you're back, you can't get eaten up by, now I'm washed up. I'm, you know, because instead you got to take, you know, solace and confidence from, and you've been here a billion times. And this is part of it. And that's why the seasonal idea helps me so much of like, you're just in winter.
Yeah.
It always happens. It happens all the time. Yeah.
I know it does. And I think you need those seasons too, as much as I fight against them.
You definitely need them.
And I'm so terrified of them.
Me too.
I need them because I need that slow time for myself creatively to come up with new ideas, but also to appreciate it when it's really crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You need both.
You need that contrast. You need the dark to appreciate the light. Like, that kind of thing.
I mean, in my creative work, but also like as an entrepreneur, I need that. I need to know. I need to push on both sides of the boundaries.
Yeah.
To know how far I can push, I guess. But right now, I'm thinking about an idea that's completely different from my work, and it's terrifying too. And I was. Just talking to Ryan about it. But it's something that I've been brewing for a while. And so it started with taking my kid to COSI, which is in town, this like science.
Kids Science Museum.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool.
It is cool.
I'm really glad I had a boy because I get to like geek out about things that like I never otherwise.
Girls could do it.
Yeah. But I think boys just like take it to that place. I feel like with Legos and like, I wouldn't normally play with Legos, but I'm like, this is so cool. And like, you really think about. So, but we were at the planetarium and I was just like, man, like outer space, this is just thinking about like the black hole. Quantum mechanics.
This is my favorite thing.
Mind-blowing. And it helps that, you know, like I've done some work in that space, like with the One Line a Day for Chronicle Books and then celestial note cards for them. And then with Tervis, like doing like celestial things. Seeing my work in that kind of space, like just gets more ideas churning. And what else can I do with watercolor? And it's so interesting to put something like two things that doesn't seem like have a lot in common and mushing them together is where like it's so weird.
That's creativity. That's you know, unexpected combinations.
I mean,
that's it.
It's like what happens when you put those two things together? I don't really know.
Yeah.
It's scary in that way, but I want to do a lot of research and reading. I've been listening a lot to Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh,
it's so cool.
I want to dive deep into this because, you know, I feel like there's a good highlight here of, you know, when you're in that season of winter, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The thing that I try to come back to over and over when I'm panicking is what Liz Gilbert talks about. She says that, you know, you need to be led by curiosity and not fear. And one of the things I keep thinking is the only thing I want to be afraid of is not being curious. And so it sounds like in that time, it'd be easy for you to panic and be like, all right, I need to revamp that other part of my business that always worked. And I need to, you know, all that. Yes. But that's all based, or, you know, I've heard people, I need to learn this software package. And I've got, you know, and I think, okay, for me, I've never learned any software from a place of fear that I ever used. I have learned tons of software and skills based on curiosity that I use.
Yeah.
And so I love you're talking about this engine of the curiosity. And I think recentering, if anybody's listening to this, that's in that winter season and you're constantly ebbing and flowing between panic and curiosity. Yeah. I just keep pushing back.
You got to trust yourself. Like that's why I started my business. It's because I was curious.
Yes.
And it was never to sell an art print or make a commodity out of it. I mean, that was an ends to a means to an end.
Yeah.
But it always started with
But you could have done a billion things interested. To get money. Yep. You know what I mean? Like right. money might have
always started an idea. Yeah.
Did
and
you,
then seeing where that idea goes.
Let's talk about, I want to talk about the space science thing, curiosity.
That's I just wanted so to. Cool.
Oh, I mean, this is what I like about quantum physics to me is I was just thinking about this the other day. So I'm very interested in what's beyond our senses.
Oh, I know.
I just love that.
Okay. So, I was watching this like lecture Neil deGrasse Tyson did on YouTube. Uh-huh. It's like this 3-hour lecture. So he talks about like all these little, like at one point he talks about how quantum mechanics to us, like because of our limitation as humans enabled in what we can process and understand.
And perceive like, and sense. And, yeah.
It's like, we're in our world and you see the circle coming towards, it looks like a circle to you. And it's just like a circle that's like a pin dot and it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it kind of recedes. But if we were able to get outside of ourselves, if we had a higher understanding of our world and dimension, we would be able to see that, no, it was in fact a sphere that was coming through this piece of paper.
Yeah.
That the paper is our life and the sphere is the thing that was a pin dot and it moved through the piece of paper. But we couldn't perceive that because we're not in this higher dimension. And it blows my mind.
Me too.
That 85% of our universe is dark matter
that
we don't understand. And he was saying, like, he was talking about all these different theories out there that physicists have.
Yeah.
And his favorite one was like, what if like 85% of this dark matter is just leakage, gravity leakage from this higher dimension leaking into our dimension and universe.
Yes.
But we just, that it's always been there, but we just can't perceive it or understand
it. Yeah, we can't test it. We don't have any instruments that can pick it up.
Mind.
Oh, this, I mean,
oh my God.
Anybody that listens to the show knows that I'm like, yes, this is all
so
I think about.
So am I.
And I love, because I was
so
thinking
crazy.
About, yeah. I love that, you know, that thought experiment of like what it would be like for a two-dimensional person to experience 3D. Like if your universe was a piece of paper flat and a sphere moved through it, you just see these slices of
right.
it.
That's exactly,
And,
oh my gosh.
I love that because it's such a good way of thinking about how, even though we can't perceive these higher dimensions, how mind-blowing it would be if we could. And it gives you a
right. And so in thinking as an artist, where color, I have such a high sensitivity to color and thinking that there must be so much more color out there than
there
we
definitely
think
is.
There is, especially with the photography that we see of outer space. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think I could contain it. Like, I think my brain would just explode, but it's so cool to think about. And he talks about like how one theory about how the universe began was that it started with like, I think one atom, one particle. And then like, I don't know, he could say it better, but, cause I don't fully understand it, but, there's some sort of like high pressure heat and the particles, something sparked and then like everything became.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
It was like, there was like nothing and then it became everything. And I was talking to my husband about it, who's a mechanical engineer. And so then he was like all like physics on me. He was like, well, that's one possibility. But you know, the more, he's like, well, that's one probability. But the most probable scenario actually.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what are you going to say? He was like, actually, is that, we're all in a computer
simulation.
Yeah. And I'm like, damn it.
Which, by the way, I don't know.
As soon as I feel like maybe I've like grasped this, he like pulled this like, he's like, no, let's zoom way out again. And I'm like, no, like, what
but
do you
I love
mean?
That. I mean, that to me is why, like, what interests me so much about it is to me, when I'm thinking about, I consider myself to be highly spiritual, and I know that's a polarizing thing to say, but I do. Every day I live in that zone of spirit. Now, I know that's weird, but let me explain it.
Yeah.
It to me, it's very much through the lens of this quantum physics, in that we don't know. There's a bunch we don't know about what we can't perceive.
Yeah.
But we know that there's a ton that we can't perceive.
Yeah.
That's what we know.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but I do think that there's a bunch of your consciousness that is not in a sensory way, but in some kind of other conscious way, interacting with all these other dimensions. And so I just like
that's crazy, you know, to think about.
Yeah. And I've heard a quantum physicist on the I think he's a quantum physicist on the On Being podcast. You ever know that with Chris Tippett? And he's talking about how, like, we know he tries to live in a mindset of knowing the truth. Quantum physics tells us time doesn't exist. It's the way that we perceive it. And so he tries to live from that place.
Okay.
And to me, that's what I mean by that's the basis, the ground of my spirituality is that kind of thinking of, you know.
Just want to be present?
Yeah. Just trying to live into reality beyond what I can perceive, which is more of a state of mind.
Okay. All right. That's interesting.
But that's what makes it so exciting, because I feel like every new thought experiment, every new, you know, like to me, what your husband said versus what you heard Neil deGrasse Tyson said, to me, that's just another way of expanding my consciousness,
yes,
you know?
Yeah. I know.
And I love
expanding.
Yeah.
The consciousness.
Yeah, that's what I'm all about. I love what you're talking about. I want to go deep on, there's a few things you said
that's
that I'm like,
yeah.
It's
a lot about watercolor, yeah.
Yeah, so I love, you know, when you're talking about the sphere thing, moving in and out. So as it's getting closer to you, it's getting bigger. And then I instantly thought, I loved the combination, the unexpected combination of that mental image with what it would look like to make almost a fine art piece about that, or watercolor about that, or how do you visualize that, or
I know,
or even synthesize
And I think in all of my work in the last, since I started my business with watercolor, I've always on some level subconsciously dived into that, mm-hmm. or like try to explore it, because a lot of my work is about how to capture movement, mm-hmm. and space on something, how to capture something that is instantaneous and three-dimensional in a two-dimensional space.
Man,
that
so
challenge
crazy.
Is crazy. So
that's amazing.
Yes. So like I've always been really inspired by Van Gogh. A lot of people are, but what I love about his work is that he's trying to capture light and movement and life through color. And so your eyes are constantly moving.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my work really tries to explore that, whether it's through pattern or repetition or like detail.
Yeah.
And constant changes in color. And watercolor lends itself really well to that because it's so fluid in itself. And so I'm always trying to explore, like, how do I create the sense of movement and like ebbing in and out? And so tying that, I think, into a new body of work about space and the universe, I think could be really interesting. I know that watercolor already in the work that I've done with the one line a day and the celestial note cards, I know that it has the capability of perceiving space and like the photography of the universe and stars. I know that it has that quality and I can get there, but how do I go even deeper? Mm. And like even deeper than that, like how do I then like represent like particles and like atoms? And I don't know. I just think there's something really mathematical and pattern. There's something about it, and it's another puzzle that like I see all the pieces floating in my mind, and I know it comes together in this really interesting way. I don't know what it is, and it's terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's also always my process, though, like not talking about space, but just the creative process. I never draw, like I never sketch out a full painting in pencil. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people ask me that, like, do you sketch on your watercolor paper first and pencil and then you paint over it? And I never do that because I don't want to know where it ends up. I think my work is the most interesting when it's intuitive.
Yeah.
And impulsive is the wrong word, but I think it's the most interesting when it's a I'm having a conversation with like my shapes and my strokes and colors are having a conversation from one moment to the next. It really allows me to be in the very moment that with my flow, work and flow. Responding. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm instantaneously responding to what I'm seeing on paper or seeing with the shape, how it's interacting with the next shape. And so there's like a very, there's a very intuitive state to my creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't really know how it ties into this new body of work, but it's starting to fester in my mind. And I think having this quiet period.
I have so many questions.
Yes.
I'm freaking out. It's so good.
You should have Neil deGrasse Tyson on the show. Please.
I want to.
And I think he really has this. So he did an interview recently mm-hmm. with Edward Norton.
Mm-hmm.
And I really.
On his show?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. Edward Norton, I didn't know this, but like he like wanted to be a physics, really? Hydrophysics wow. major at Yale. But anyway, he was talking about as an actor, an mm-hmm. artist, how important it is to bring that aspect into the science and astrophysics. So
meaning
I think
what?
You should.
Do you have-
meaning that visually, meaning that astrophysics, I think, is trying to bring in more people's interest into this area of
culture,
study and
like
science.
Pop culture.
Yeah, but I think visual art mm-hmm. has a very interesting opening to that.
Yeah.
Because it's something that everybody can understand and not everyone can understand the intricacies and mathematics of physics. I can't.
True. No,
I don't.
I can't either.
But visually,
I
can be enticed into something about that subject.
Yes.
And as an artist, it's my job, and I love that I can intrigue people. I can bring people into a conversation about something that surpasses language.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very universal.
Yeah.
I think I love that about art.
Yeah.
Anyone can understand and interpret a circle and a color. And
well, I also like, you know, it goes, you're talking about transcending language. And I think what's interesting that there's kind of two sides to that. You've got my brain working in its most abstract state, which is my favorite, but
Let's
some people
there.
Are like, wow, I don't know if I can follow that. So it reminds me of this idea of like a picture transcends language. It reminds me of how, okay, think about it like it does so for like a baby. So like a right? So it's on a lower level than than language in a way.
But very primal.
Very primal. But and then I think on a higher level too, which reminds me of a few different things. So like there's a bunch of like when people have scientifically quantifiable mystical experience. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
So it's like when people like in a lab, I mean it happens out of a lab, but in a lab they've like witnessed brain activity of someone's on LSD or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
And they have what's there's certain things that quantify it as a mystical experience, a sense of oneness, all these things. And it has very particular brain activity and it changes them, know? And that experience, things like that are also nonverbal. So like, as you try to explain them, they actually, that where that's held in your brain, the memory actually gets lessened the more you try to put words to it.
Oh my gosh.
So
I mean, that makes sense. Crazy.
Yeah. It's kind of like you have a crazy dream and to you it's meaningful.
Yeah.
And then you're like, let me tell you about it. And you're like, wait, it's getting dumb.
Yeah.
My God.
Every time you think about your dream, it gets less. It's like a derivative and it becomes less and less. Yeah.
And so I love the idea that, you know, pictures are both primal and like the lower form that's still legit and like very and primal in that, you know, this is very what it means to be human. But then there's language. And then on top of language, there's this other nonverbal thing that pictures can do, which are like a mystical experience, which is like beyond language, not just below it, but beyond it. And it also, anyway, I'm not going to keep going down the thread because I could go for a long time about that.
No, I agree with you though.
Yeah.
I agree. So I have two thoughts on that. One, in college, I studied traditional Chinese at a university close to my school.
Mm.
And I got really into pictography. because that's what the Chinese language
was. Was it Brown?
Pictogram, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went to Brown.
Just say it. Brag about it. I wish I went to Brown.
Actually, you know, it was great.
Yeah,
because I didn't have to get into Brown to take a Brown course.
It's pretty sweet.
So, yeah. And so I took advantage of that. But
which you could have got into Brown anyway.
I don't think I could.
I bet you could. Anyway.
Anyways. No, I could not have. But okay. So Chinese language pictograms is what the Chinese written language is based on.
So it's really that makes sense. Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's very poetic.
Visual, probably. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then my other thought is a dream project I want to do. I've thought about it since college. Thesis is I want to be able to write a book one day that had no words and was just pictures. Mm-hmm. And like in the most simplified form too. Like what if it was just a book with circles? Mm-hmm. And universally it would be understood and interpreted in a million different ways. And so it's open-ended and I just really want, could I tell a story with just shapes and colors?
Yeah.
Is
I love
that possible?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I will say that I love that because I've been thinking my new definition of illustration is writing with pictures.
Oh my God. Wait, that's what it is. Yes. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yes. And the reason I say that is because I, so for a little while I was getting kind of frustrated with some of the more vague client projects. I have plenty of client projects that I love.
Yeah.
But then some of them were like, they're a bit like they're dictating what to draw, and it's really decorative. Which is there's nothing wrong with decorative, but when it's not
restrictive,
when I'm not, when they're you know like you can make something decorative that's meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm,
where you're like, oh, this really comes from my soul,
right?
But when it's just like, when it's dictated to you, it's just you know hollow, right?
Yeah.
But then when I would work on a picture book recently, I've been doing more picture books, and I'm not even writing them.
Yeah.
But then I had the sensation of what it feels like when I write a talk or when I write a podcast or when I write a blog post, but through pictures. I'm like, oh, I'm like saying things.
Yes.
It's and exactly that. And I think so that fascinates me, this idea of like writing books with no words and you're still writing
it's
them.
It's such a good challenge.
Yeah, it is. Super
it's good. Really hard.
Yeah, it is. It's really hard, but
it's really
satisfying. And it's also there's that primal aspect of it because I was just listening to, you should check out, Linda Berry's book, Making Comics. Do you know Linda Berry?
No.
Heard of her? She used to, I think she was married to Ira Glass actually.
Oh
back
my gosh.
In the day. Yeah. But she's a really famous comics, like underground comics artist. And she has a book called Making Comics that just came out, that Drawn and Quarterly sent to me. And she goes a lot into, the primal nature of pictures and the more, I don't know, all about writing with pictures. She didn't use that terminology, but she just goes into how there's so much more humanity and that, you know, when we used to write originally, it was through pictures, you know, hieroglyphics
and
so I
cave drawing.
Yeah. So I love all that you're saying. I want to go to, there's a few things that you said I want to go back to. So you were blowing my mind here with the idea of when you're making a picture, you're saying, I want to represent 3D on 2D.
Yes.
It's almost like the thought experiment that you were saying in reverse. So you know the one about the sphere moving through a two-dimensional plane?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
That's crazy.
Literally, express? How can I take 3D and revert it back to 2D in a way that it's represented? And then it made me realize that this is something I do, and it's almost like a meditation because it's like I always say one of the things I want to get across is the feeling. You ever, you know, like on a nature documentary where you have a plant growing in stop motion?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
There's something about that to me that feels like it's capturing the essence of life, the mystery of life, right?
Well, it's the energy.
The energy of it, right? and I want to do that with a static picture.
Yes.
How do you make it feel like that?
I do that.
Right?
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
That's why I love watercolor.
Tell me about that.
It's so fluid.
Yeah.
And so the colors, because it transitions from light to dark, one color to the next, so seamlessly, mm-hmm. it has by nature a feeling of the natural world.
Yeah.
And how light is reflected off objects, light and contrast, all of that. So it's already kind of tied, baked into this medium.
Yes.
And so then all you have to do is push it
mm-hmm.
in whatever direction that is. And I'm always trying to push it in the direction of like movement and extreme fluidity of like, or like extreme darkness and lightness and
contrast and
things that flow and blend and gradiate into each other.
That is the great thing about, you know, the gradient in the spectrum of watercolor is it does give the illusion that it's moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because it was.
Yes.
Because it was moving. Because when it was wet. Moving.
Yeah.
Because when it was wet, it was moving.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing is just like a photograph, an imprint of that process of it becoming something onto paper. And
How crazy is this?
It's so crazy. It blows my mind every time I'm painting. And so I always want to capture.
No drugs were used in this interview. It does, but this is, I mean, I honestly think this type of sensitivity and curiosity, this is what makes art.
Yes.
Yeah, it
is. And
tripping off of it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no. Yeah. Yes. I mean, like, from the first time I tried watercolor, I had that experience. And I think a lot of people
really
reached
out to me. You sounded like you were talking about a drug. That's how awesome. But that's how the curiosity and the wonder.
Yeah. No, it's the wonder. It really, like, very deep within me, it taps into this joy and this, like, I love it so much because it is so interesting. And what I love about watercolor, and it's very different from other mediums, is that it's always different. Mm-hmm. It's always a different experience. You cannot by nature replicate it. And it pushes me and it's scary because I can't replicate a color and how does this work? You can't really control it, but I'm a very type A person and I want things in control and I can't. This is the one thing that I can't ever control.
Man, how therapeutic.
It is. It's very meditative. It is. It's so interesting. But I've always wanted to bring the video media into this because it really is more about the process than the end, because the end really is just like a photograph of that process mm-hmm. than those in an imprint of those moments when it was wet
mm-hmm.
and it was alive. And now it's like, this is the still of like what it became dry, and it has a very different coloration to it.
Yeah.
When it was wet versus dry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I'm depicting nature, like with florals and landscapes, it's a very easy translation of like life and like the 3D bringing into the 2D. But when you go into the abstract, and mathematics have always had an influence, and geometry have always had an influence on my work,
mm-hmm.
in my geos and abstract work, it brings like a different dimension to it. It's a really weird push and pull because math and physics and science is so there's very specific constraints.
Rigid. It's exact.
Yes.
Yeah.
Watercolor is not.
No.
So you're talking about mashing two very different things together. And that's what it is for me. And I love that.
But the weird thing about all that is that the universe is based on math, and yet look at the chaos in life, and you know what I mean? Like it is all the only reason
we
know anything about quantum physics is because of equations, because we can't perceive it.
I know.
So we know.
It's the weirdest riddle. It's like,
it's amazing.
It's the thing that
we
can't.
How do we get this touchy, squishy,
all this?
They can't
see the particles, right? And
right.
Like the only way is like through, it's weird.
Yes.
It's really, really strange.
I am just increasingly frustrated with the algorithm. And I I have like made it my business not to be someone who just complains about the circumstances, but just figures out a different way. Well, there is a different way. It's called Patreon.com. If I want to get to my core audience and I want to really connect with them and know that they've seen the stuff and know I'm going to hear from them, I post it to my Patreon. Start a Patreon, get that direct connection to your audience, get that, you know, be funded by the people who care about your work, your true fans. Patreon. It's like Pat Neon. That guy could be cool, right? He sounds like he knows how to break dance. Pat Neon, he uses Patreon to fund his dancing. Patreon, Patreon, Patreon.com. It's October, so you know what that means. It's no longer Skillshare, it's Shillscare. Remember that? One person that remembers me doing that last year. Shillscare. It's scary to learn new skills, but not with Skillshare. Go. We have a new class. It's about finding your style. I'm so proud of it. The reviews have been great. The results have been great. People have really been doing the exercises, and I've loved watching the illustrations and the thing, all the creations that have come out. It's medium agnostic, whatever kind. You can find yourself, find your work, find yourself, find your work. I just kept saying that. Skillshare. Shillscare. Skillshare.com/creativepep for 2 free months. Dear Lord, I've lost it. Storyblocks video. Go, you know, bolster up. Reach into the internet and get this stock video from Storyblocks. Go to storyblocks.com/creativepeptalk and go check it out and beef up those videos you're putting out. Video content. I really believe that on Instagram TV and YouTube, like, creators need to be making stuff in those places. And one way to just take it to the next level is Storyblocks. Go to storyblocks.com/creativepeptalk to learn more today. Do you know, you should listen to the Radio Lab about the mantis shrimp. Have you ever heard of this?
Remind me, because I've listened to a lot of the Radio Lab. So maybe
this is the mantis shrimp has a lot more cones than
yes!
us.
Yeah. Okay. I remember now. Yeah.
I don't
keep
need
going.
It, but all I'm saying is this thing you were talking about of like, there's all these colors that we can't see or know about.
I know.
That is a fact. So we know that's true. We know we can't register. I mean, just ultraviolet light, but then way beyond all these other things. And I do like the idea of like trying to accomplish the impossible task of showing new colors.
I know.
Yeah. I'm just super inspired by you speaking to creativity that way.
Thank you. It's when I teach watercolor, like, it's something that I always try and touch on and challenge people, because people will come and say like, okay, well, let's paint, you know, leaves together or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever the assignment is, immediately they'll pick up green.
Yeah.
Like, out of the tube. They're like, well, okay, like, leaf is green. And I always try and push them, like, no, okay, but why don't you try adding some yellow to that?
Color is infinite.
Yeah. Like, okay, here's something. And you here's hand something them that people some people always. Yeah. This is actually, I actually always start my watercolor workshops with, this is actually a therapy session that you're about to have rather than a watercolor session.
Yeah.
Cause I'm always like, you can do this. Like, you just have to try. But, so my color palette, my painting palette, has wells and whatever. And it has all these like areas where you can mix colors. And what people always get so scared about is the fact that I rarely wash the palette part where I'm mixing, and I do it on purpose.
Oh, it's so good.
Because then I'm already starting at a place where I'm not using colors right out of the tube, and I'm pushing myself to make new colors and to be uncomfortable with colors that are not what I think, like a leaf is green. All right, well, let's just throw some purple into it and see what kind of a green that is.
Yeah.
And, so I call it like seasoning my palette. But people get really freaked out
that's
about
so
that.
Good.
They get, I mean, seasoning to a point. It. Yeah. Like
so
seasoning
good.
Seasoning like a
cast iron skillet.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because.
Oh my gosh.
Because
that's
nature
amazing.
Doesn't, you don't see straight out of the tube.
No.
Fuchsia.
Never.
I mean, no.
Almost
there's
never.
always subtleties to it, because light is always reflecting.
Yes.
And, but people get really freaked out about that. And I mean, to a point, like, I have to wash and start new. But people get really uncomfortable with starting a palette that's quote unquote dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, oh, I don't know what to do with this blue that's not blue anymore. Like, yeah. It's like purpley blue, or like, oh, what is that? What do I do with that? So I always like push my students to... I'm always like mixing up their palette, and I could tell they just like really tense up. They're like, oh God, I gotta like rinse this off really quick when she leaves. But
did you, man, okay, hold on. Let me take a note because there's another, I want to go to, there's like three things that I don't want to miss them. There was, you were talking about.
I was talking about seasoning the palette.
Season, oh my gosh, I love it. That's exactly it. Okay, I already have that. All right. So there's, all right, there's a few things, but.
It's bad. First one is, actually, the other part of that is It's just laziness.
But it's amazing. It's amazingness.
Lazy. I'm too lazy to clean
Dude,
every time.
I love it. So I want to speak to, I'll start it this way. So I've been exploring this idea of there's two types of creativity I've been thinking a lot about. So I used to think, I love strategy.
Yeah.
But I used to think, that it was the opposite of creativity, because strategy, The definition is you pick an end And then you reverse engineer your plan.
Yes.
Which, so you're saying start with the end in mind.
Yes.
Whereas most people think of creativity as, I don't know where this is going to end. Like that, I'm starting without end in mind, right? Which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I've started to develop a theory about there's exploratory creativity And then there's strategic creativity, because strategic creativity is how you write a mystery novel. So you still creativity, because if you write, I had this, I bought a mystery novel, how to write a mystery novel, like 101 thing. Uh-huh. And they talk about like, you know, foundation of it is Start with, Who done it from the beginning and then reverse engineer.
Okay.
How are we going to get there?
Okay.
How are we going to lay tricks? How are we, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it becomes like a puzzle, right? And that's a certain type of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, this is probably not the best example, but it's the most pure, unadulterated, exploratory creativity is the show Lost, because at least by the admission of the writers, they had no idea where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
And they were literally just saying, write the next episode, take it to the craziest place you can think to take it from where we were. Mm-hmm. And so there's this like, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay. I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that hit you. But I think everybody probably has a natural inclination. I actually think my natural is exploratory. But I think that I did a journey to integrate strategic. Mm-hmm. And now I'm probably leaning that way too much. So there's this like, I want to like a push and pull.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. What I'm thinking about while you're saying that is I see create those two things as the same.
Yeah.
Because in my experience, creativity have never been successful for me without constraints.
Mm-hmm.
If I sat down with a piece of paper and I was like, whatever under the
whatever
sun.
Whatever happens, yeah.
Anything. I mean, but no,
that's
but
exactly
see,
true.
But yes. even then, there are constraints, because I'm constrained to this piece of paper.
Yeah.
I'm constrained to this period of time. There are always constraints. I don't think creativity is possible without constraints.
Yes.
I think it's why I love math, because there are constraints built into the creativity. So if I give myself a set of constraints, then I can push on those boundaries.
Yes.
Because I think as creatives, we always want to push.
I agree.
I think if there are no boundaries to push, then it's just like, oh, whatever.
Floating.
Like, I don't really know. And it's not really that interesting, or it's not that focused.
Yes.
But when you have constraints and you have boundaries, you're able to focus your idea and not diverge on like five different ideas and not knowing, but focus on one and take it all the way. So in my experience, they're like the same.
Yeah, I actually think that, and that's where I am now, is that it is a ebb and flow pendulum thing that happens.
I think
that
you
play in between these states and you work within them. And I think the reason I've been exploring it is that I think when our culture thinks of creativity, and I think when creatives think of themselves, there's the whole think outside the box thing. And that I think it leans really heavily on the exploratory side.
Mm.
And I kind of, it's to me, developing that idea as a way of challenging creatives to be like, you know, the constraints, the strategic side is a really great balance. It's a great springboard to push off from. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can, because I, you know, so many creatives.
You have to start somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love everything you said. Speaking of which, you're talking about being a type A person. Has painting been therapy for your, I'm not, you're saying you're type A. I'm not calling you controlling. Just saying that I know I have a lot of people that are type A. My parents,
type A.
My stepmom and my dad. I'm talking to you. Like that, usually that comes with I want to be in control, right? Yeah. Was watercolor therapy of letting go then?
Yeah, yeah, like 100%. It's why I love watercolor, because it challenges me to let go.
Yeah.
When every aspect of my life outside of painting is very type A.
Yeah.
Painting is my time to force myself to be in the moment, in this instant, be present.
Yeah.
And let go. And I get really sucked into it. Yeah. 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 It's the one thing that is a constant throughout my life, whatever I'm going through. It's the one way that I could really process through things and come out feeling more centered, more joy, like happy as a person.
I was going to say, did it teach you things about how, like, I'm assuming you're seeing the results of letting go and letting things happen and collaborating with the page and the paint rather than owning it. And I wonder if that teaches you things about life when you're going into being a mom or being a wife or being, you know what I mean? Where you,
I know,
yeah,
it should. I need it to. I think it does when I go into my studio and I'm painting and stressful day with work or balancing like life, mm-hmm. home and work. When I go into painting, I immediately, it's like a brain switch and I can just get sucked into it. And I'm like reminded of, okay, letting go, like decompressing, and it feels really good. Mm-hmm. I should bring it into more aspects of my life. I wish like watercolor could like whisper in my ear and like remind me to do it outside of painting, uh-huh. the process of, but it, I think it has taught me, I don't know, it's really pushed. It's continued to push me, and I hope for the rest of my life it continues to push me, because then there's no joy in it. There's no challenge to it if I'm just like, okay, like this is as good as it's ever going to be. I wonder a lot if one day there will be a point where I no longer paint watercolor. That I hope this isn't the case, that I'm influenced by trend and it's like not trending anymore, so then like I don't paint watercolor. I don't think that's the case, because watercolor for me means more than just a trend. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if watercolor will transcend at some point into another medium, in a different way of making art. Because at the end of the day, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And if that means a new medium, maybe that's what it is. If that point comes, I'll know it.
Well, but, it's kind of like you saying, because I'm exploring this in a way as well, like if there's a medium that captures those things better or in a new way, that like, you know, you were saying you were interested in video because
I really am,
right? So like your static image is like a screenshot or a snapshot of the motion and stuff that you want. And actually I think I wanted to bring this back because I want to hear what you think about this. I almost feel like trying to capture, like I was saying, when I draw something, I want to capture in one image that feeling of life energy, right?
Right. Yeah.
And to me, capturing that feeling of this pulsing feeling in something static reminds me of the process of meditation and trying to be in the moment, because the moment is never static.
Yeah.
It's always a connection of these, you know, so it's like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love it as like an illustration that's static.
Yeah.
It can do something that motion can't do, because if it can hold motion in a freeze frame, that's closer to the present moment as we experience it than it is
moment to moment. Yeah.
You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's trippy, but yeah.
I know. Well, this whole conversation has been
mind
expanding. Universe is expanding. No.
I was going to say, like, I think the second baby made you more trippy, and I'm for it. I'm happy about it.
You know, honestly, though, I think I've always had this.
Yeah.
I think just really leaning into it has brought it all back.
Yes. Well, I think... I have this weird tangent thing in my mind, but I was just going to say that I think even though I am interested in the static thing, I am interested also in, does animation capture that feeling better in a way that I'll never be able to capture in a moment? Like the still image something that the animation can't do. But,
I know.
But the anime, yeah, does that make sense?
Well, I think in theory, the animation would be a more direct connection and expression, but then does it take the interesting aspect out of it? Because then it's like so like literal. On the nose, maybe.
Yeah.
But
and it's like
I
it
don't
loses
know
the
but,
leap when yeah, we kept right, talking about the exactly. synesthetic leap of like, well, it's two things that we're calling them the same, but they're not, and that's right. where the interesting part of it is.
You're pushing it together. I don't know, but it could also push the static idea to somewhere new.
Yeah.
That like watercolor has its limitations. Mm-hmm. But if I can bring animation into that and push it even further down that specific path, mm-hmm. maybe it'll be even more interesting. Maybe true. Not.
Yeah.
But it's worth exploring and trying, and it's terrifying. I don't know. But I'm interested in, I know nothing about animation.
Yeah.
But I think it could be really interesting.
You know what would be cool? As like, I have so many things going on in my brain. This conversation is really good. But one thing I thought about was, you know, you ever have those like, you ever see those like breathing apps where it's like an expanse and a down?
Yes.
What would be cool is to put your moving watercolor on a boomerang loop. To where like it goes from small to big, down to big to small. Like
that would be like amazing.
These tessellation kind
actually,
of Laura,
okay,
not tessellation.
So,
anyway, yeah.
All right. So I'm just going to say this one thing about what I'm thinking about animation. One thing I love about watercolor, it's very specific to watercolor, is its translucency aspect.
Yeah.
So what if it was like all these translucent layers, but ebbing and flowing in and out of space?
Yeah.
And time, no.
Yeah.
But space, though, just like adding translucency into that and adding gradient on top of that, mm-hmm. I think just throwing all those things into one pot, I think could be something really cool.
Yeah, that is super cool.
I don't know what that looks like, but I think my interest in pattern and color and watercolor, all of these things pushed together into something static, then you add animation onto it, can then bring it those patterns alive and mm-hmm. not be literal, but
right.
be like another level of like artistic creation and uniqueness. Being able to see my patterns move, I think could be really cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, I got so that's the one thing about a good interview mm-hmm. is you, if it's going too well, then you lose what you're going to say next because you're listening. I was very sucked into that and I was going to land it all with, it's really exciting to hear you trip out about creativity.
Yeah.
And I'm in a similar boat and I've been thinking about how your creative goals and your business goals don't have to, they don't have to compete. They don't have to be exclusive. However, I do find in my journey that there was a real season of getting the business working and that was great. And I was all in,
mm-hmm.
but I'm all for this season where mm-hmm. my creativity has turned up a bunch
mm-hmm.
and I'm less into like maximizing the strategy behind getting max profit and best jobs and these clients, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm more interested in tripping out over color synesthesia and stuff like that.
But you know, the reason why you're able to do that is because you put in the time.
Exactly. And that is the takeaway that I wanted to, that I'm glad you said that. Because my point wasn't like, and the creativity's better. It's more just like,
no,
the whole idea. Together. Yeah. Yes.
You have to have both.
Yep.
Because if you just had the creativity, then you wouldn't be able to share it with people successfully or the way you want it to.
Well, I wouldn't, but to me, and I think this is there's a rebirth of creative pep talk for me, because for the longest time I thought it's about business and art and it's about them going hand in hand. Uh-huh. And business can be great and all that. But then now I'm feeling like my true heart has always been, even though I had to go through a season of hardcore business and like really going in there, my whole heart has always been get the business right, get the money right, because money is time. And don't have time if you don't have money. You might not like that. The fact that's the fact that we live in that world. And maybe you can work to change that. Change the government. Do it if that's what's in your heart. But you can't ignore the fact that for 2020, where we're at, time is money. And if you want time to waste on creativity in the best possible sense, you've got to get the money right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least enough to keep being able to do the work that you
do. That's what I mean.
I've always had that. I think this is another conversation for another day.
You're but right. I love you're like the real host who's like, I think this is the
end. Andy, welcome to my show. But I think that now I've lost my
train. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, it's sorry. Okay.
You were saying
something about money. I always have this conflict. Even now, part of the fear of starting new direction is I worry that my work becomes too commercial. I think it comes from coming from an art school where it's hounded into you to be a fine artist and to not quote unquote sell out to the commercial industry. Mm-hmm. My personal philosophy is I think bringing the two together is my personal goal in my career. Because then I can share it with more people and it's more accessible. And it doesn't just live in a gallery, which I think it's more interesting when people can experience and use my work. But I think about, it's a conflict in my mind of like, am I selling out too much? Am I going too commercial? Is my work no longer about the art? But I don't. And then I always come back to, no, I don't think that, because it's always about the idea first.
Yeah.
Whether it's this idea about space or my love for nature, whatever it is, it comes back to the idea. And I think as long as it always comes back to that idea first and that curiosity
the why,
first.
The heart.
Yeah. I think I'm not selling out. My work genuinely isn't commercial because I'm not creating the art to sell the art.
Yeah.
I'm creating the art because I have a genuine passion and interest in exploring this thing. But I think having my work in commercial spaces gives me the opportunity and the time to be able to explore and have these downtimes where I can decompress, which is good for everyone.
Well, it's good for your creativity.
You need that.
It's good for you.
For the creativity, you have to have that break.
Yes. And I'm like more and more convinced every day from the case studies and the biographies and the stuff that I'm reading, like the best stuff comes from where you've got time and space to lose yourself into stuff. Okay. I think we did it.
Great conversation.
This was amazing.
This was awesome.
Yeah, it was so good. I'm super inspired.
I know. Now I want to go paint.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming. This was
Thank
awesome.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have you after your next baby.
Yeah, which will be never.
Okay, never see
I
you
mean,
again.
The baby. The coming back, yes. I'd be happy to.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
Okay, thanks, Yao, for taking the time to chat about how all the other dimensions feed into your two-dimensional artwork. That was awesome, and it's very much my jam. Hope you guys all got inspired and excited about that. Go follow Yao Cheng Design, YaoChengDesign. Almost got lost there. Yao's work's gorgeous. You'll be glad it's in your feed. She's great. Go check her out. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Alex Sugg for our soundtrack. Thanks to Jordan Aaron for editing the show. Thanks to Ryan Appleton for doing the intro, managing my chaos, helping me and Yao find time to sit down and talk, and just generally be in support with the content. Thanks, Rye. Rye. Okay. You know what you got to do until we speak again? Got some exciting stuff coming up on the show. Stay pepped up. That was way mild. Stay pepped up.